Chris, how would you describe over-tourism?
I think over-tourism is a problem that is now a global problem. I think for a while, we as an industry have been kind of happy to accept that it's certain destinations around the world. But in the certainly the last 3 years or so, we've started to see over-tourism encroach in destinations and regions that we actually have never even considered before. It's a global problem that's having a severe impact on the cultural and heritage aspects of some of our most prestigious and sacred areas around the world.
Which places are you thinking of?
Well, there's so many places, to be honest with you, Veronica, but let's have a look at just a couple of them. So if we look at Rapa Nui, so Easter Island, and I'm sure that you know, the images of the Moai, the statues of Easter Island, is kind of burnt in humanity's DNA. Now, you wouldn't think that they would necessarily have a problem. So Easter Island decided quite rightly that tourism could be, you know, a real boost to their economy. If they grew their tourism, then of course it's going to be better for social conditions, etc., which tourism generally is. So they have a population of around about 5,800 people. Last year they welcomed around 100,000, and now they're having to deal with 20 tons of garbage every day. And they're a Pacific island in the middle of nowhere. How do you deal with that? Yeah. And it was never factored in. And the reason it was never factored in is because we don't have a whole of government approach. We tend as an industry to separate ourselves out. We are tourism. We are responsible for marketing a destination. We're responsible for growing visitation. And then infrastructure and all those other areas are someone else's problem.
So how do we change that?
The first thing any destination should do, and I'm not talking about countries here, I'm talking about provinces, towns, villages, anyone who wants to really be serious about growing tourism in a responsible way, and in a way that's going to protect the very assets that they're wanting to promote, needs to do at the very bare minimum what we call a carrying capacity study. So this is where we look at a destination and we look at what capacity they've got. You know, the obvious stuff is in hotel rooms and other forms of accommodation. But we then need to look at, you know, the infrastructure for transportation. Do they have enough car parking spots, coach parking bays? Do they have enough public toilets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And eventually you build a plan of just how many tourists or visitors you can take before you break.
We hear a lot about Venice and about cruise ships going in there and offloading thousands of passengers.
We have a responsibility and a duty to ensure that we do not destroy the very thing that people, A, are wanting to visit. But not only that, people live in these areas. So if you look at Santorini, if you look at Venice, if you look at Croatia, and you look, as you quite rightly say, you look at the thousands of people that are all deboarding at the same time. And there might be 4, 5, 6 cruise ships in there. So we're talking thousands of people. You know, this is not what's on the postcard. And I think the cruise companies need to wise up and have better distribution on the way they do this. We're seeing things, and this is the kind of thing that as to why we actually formed this organization. There are certain destinations around the world. There's actually one in the Pacific where they have people, cultures that are thousands of years old that live today the way they did 2, 3, 4, 5 thousand years ago. It's been allowed or it's been permitted by government that the cruise companies can actually go and visit these people. So imagine if you're a tribal elder and you've lived in your village your whole life and you've had this community for thousands of years and you live a Stone Age hunter-gatherer existence. And then all of a sudden, twice a week, you start getting cruise ships that have over 2,000 passengers on there, and there's only probably 150 people in your community.
Where is this that you're talking about, Chris?
This is in Vanuatu, but it's actually happening in other parts of the world. Think about what that does to your psychology. Think about what that does to the mindset of the people who live in those communities. There's no way of going back to the way it was because your whole life has changed, your whole environment has changed. Whereas if there was a plan in place, there's ways and means of doing it that don't destroy the very thing that you're wanting to see. This is our ancestry. This is humanity's DNA. I know that might sound a bit sort of, you know, over the top, but it's not. It's the invisible skin that we wear as people that tells everyone who we are. If we actually as people go in and start to erode this or to some point even make it extinct, then it's gone forever. You can't plant culture. You can't regrow it. Once it's gone, it's gone.
has your organisation, it's a very new organisation, do you carry any weight? Can you make a difference?
Absolutely we can. I'll tell you how I came about to put this thing together. I started doing quite a bit of work in China. The Chinese are very, very hot on this particular topic. They have a whole series of very rich cultural areas, particularly down the west side of China. And they contacted me and two other people to come and work with them to try and develop plans on how to protect the culture, but still allows visitors and tourists to actually gain access to this. One of the reasons why they're doing this is when you look at the trends in travel right now, you look in particular at millennial. Asian millennials want to have a true, authentic cultural experience. Now, the word authentic gets thrown about quite a lot. The thing about that, and the thing that set the alarm bells off, is we can expect to have in excess of 100 million of them just from Asia over the next 10 years. I looked at a number of studies. One in particular covered 124 countries and about 38,000 millennials. And 86%, by far, the number one thing that they wanted to do was have a true, authentic cultural experience. We're starting to gain access to areas that were currently off the radar. And it's not all about the thousands and thousands of visitors that you're getting in certain places like Venice or queuing up at the Sistine Chapel. It can be a couple of hundred people that can basically destroy a village if they don't know what they're doing. So if you were to look at, for example, ICOM, which is the International Council of Museums, which is very powerful around the world, has a lot of government pull, amazing funding, amazing research. They have 45,000 members, museums, but they don't consider themselves in tourism, even though probably 80 to 90% of the people going through their turnstiles are tourists. So you can start to see that there's research out there that we could use, that we could utilize, instead of the finger always pointing at tourism is the destroyer of culture. Right now, I have to say we are. So the first thing I did is I started to align key experts around the world. I have the vice president of ICOMOS, Sue Hodges, who's actually Australian based. I have Professor Thomas Bauer. Thomas is an expert on tourism, sustainability, and environmental science. He actually wrote the tourism plan for Antarctica. So we have some really strong people from around the world who have the capacity to work with destinations, to work with industry at large, on developing plans that will ensure you grow at a regulated pace that doesn't outpace where you need to be.
Tourist bodies, are they prepared to listen to you?
Well, as you know, it's a process. We only launched the company recently. But we've got, you know, considerable momentum already around the world. And every day we're starting to hear stories. I was in touch with the Turkish government a few days ago, because 3 weeks ago, Turkey made an announcement that they achieved 40 million visitors last year, which is, you know, something not to be sniffed at. That's a pretty good result. Following that announcement, within the same sentence almost, the minister said, we intend to grow that to 70 million in the next 3.5 years. We are going to open up some of our most historical archaeological sites and ancient areas of Turkey for people to visit. Now, are you going to tell me that they're going to have all the checks and balances in place? Not by, you know, the 3.5 years, because it's too late then. They want to be 70 million. Have they already put the checks and balances in place to protect all of that? It's a ridiculous notion. We have a short-term mentality where everything has to be done now, and it's all about profit, it's all about gain, it's all about numbers. The consequences of our actions tend to be left for someone else to deal with, and we can't afford to do that anymore. We have to be responsible to look at the consequences. There's nothing wrong with making money. There's nothing wrong with making profit, but it can't be done at all costs. We need to look at the long-term ramifications. What is the impact that we're having? We've been reading about recently, you know, plastic in the ocean and how bad that is. Now, the first report about plastics in the ocean was in 1966. It's only when the problem became too big to hide that we've now got a problem. Now, is the tourism industry going to do the same? Are we going to bury our heads and pretend everything's fine? Or are we actually going to wise up and do something about it? The reason I formed this organization, Veronica, was because, believe it or not, there is no organization out there that does this. There is no organization linked to tourism that does it. I'm not interested in being a missionary. There's commercial value in this. The organizations and the companies that will succeed in the future are those that recognize their responsibility. those responsibilities to environment, to the planet, to us as a civilization. The ones that are wise enough to understand that where they tread will have a long-term impact. So tourism, in effect, has to be the protector of culture for the future.